This is the Inside Slant Football Podcast.
And here we go, here we go.
Brought to you by JayhawkSlant.com. Broadcasting around the world.
Around the world.
We have the latest on KU recruiting, analysis, and what the coaches and players are saying behind the scenes. Here are your hosts, Randy Withers and John Kirby.
Hey, everybody, this is Randy Withers back with another edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. We're back with another football-only edition of the podcast to get you ready for the final non-conference matchup of the year as the Jayhawks go on the road into ACC territory to take on the Duke Blue Devils. We're going to look back at the Baylor game first, but we won't spend too much time on that one. As obviously, as we all saw, that's not something we want to really relive if we don't have to. We will be joined, though, by Dave Harding, who is the analyst for the Duke Radio Network, give our predictions, as always, and talk about the latest from the recruiting trail. Without further ado, let me go ahead and bring in my man, the publisher of Jayhawk Slant and the premier, preeminent maybe. Let's go with that one. Preeminent Kansas football expert on the KU Jayhawk beat, Mr. John Kirby. John, how you doing this evening?
God dang, man. You always say stuff that makes me sound old. Preeminent.
I realize every week I find a different way to say old without saying old.
Yeah.
Speaking of old, you haven't been on the board much this week. I heard you weren't feeling too hot.
No, I've been sliding in and doing some stuff. Yeah, man, I don't know what it was late last week, and you know, I don't know if I came down a cold, then it went sinus infection, but man, I got bad allergies. Grew up with bad allergies, and heck, it seems like every prescription drug they give me never works. But man, what I had the last 5 days, it knocked me sideways. But hey, I'm over it. We're ready to do a podcast and you know, hey, you fight through it, right? Game day. You got to fight through the injuries.
Absolutely. And it's clear that it's no accident that you're married to a nurse.
Yeah, well, trust me. You know, she's always like, you need to get back on your allergy shots. I'm like, I don't have time to go sit in the office. And, you know, you go get those allergy shots. You got to sit there and it's like an hour. And I'm like, I don't have time for that during football season.
You got to hit her with the old Jesse Ventura from Predator. I ain't got time to bleed.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, hey, man, good to see that you're feeling at least a little bit better and that you're getting kind of back into it. Let's go ahead and jump right into this thing and get it out of the way. I know nobody wants to talk about Baylor and what happened, but we've got to. I mean, it was not a thing of beauty, but like we've talked about, you know, first game. It was, well, actually not the first game, the second game, excuse me. We were there at the half, 14-7. They were in position to do some things potentially. And then again, it just, gosh,
well,
I don't know,
listen,
what to say.
Listen, I'll give you some credit. When we do our predictions, you were a lot closer on the score than I was. Okay. And, you know, I sit and watch a lot of football during the week. I mean, we'll get into Duke later. I mean, I've sat and watched Duke play two full games now just to learn about them. And, you know, I didn't watch Baylor play Texas Southern. Okay. Texas Southern's bad. And I knew I wouldn't learn much from that, but I did watch, you know, Baylor play Texas State in their opener and they just didn't run away from Texas State and they just looked okay. And you and I have talked on here and college football coaches over the year have always told me, you know, when you're dealing with 18 to 22 year old kids, They vary from week to week. You get different performances and you know, improvements from week one to week two and week three. And listen, going into that game, after what I saw from Baylor against Texas State, Kansas back at home, I thought this was a game they could play. But I'll tell you the one thing that you just don't know till you see teams line up, Randy, is just how much bigger and more physical Baylor was. I mean, they mauled the Jayhawks. They really did on both sides of the ball. And this isn't a coach thing. This isn't a player thing. Baylor just had bigger, stronger guys. And sometimes you run into that in the football. I'll never forget this. I remember talking to Tony Severino when he started that year against Hutchison, that series when they played in football.
Yeah.
I want to say Hutch came to Rockhurst in the first year, and they beat him. That was Nathan Shieldhouse and all those guys. It was a heck of a game, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the next year, Rockhurst has got to go on the road, and they play Hutchison. And they go out there, and I mean, I think Hutch just beats them up. Like, Rockhurst never got beat up like that, and Hutchison did. And I remember talking to Severino after the game. I said, how was it? And he said, you know, I told the kids after the game. He goes, guys, sometimes you're the hammer, and sometimes you're the nail. when I was watching the Baylor game the other day, that Tony Severino talk came back to me. Baylor was the hammer, and the Jayhawks were the nail. I mean, they just lined up and beat KU. And listen, there was no scheme. There was nothing Lance Leipold and his staff could do. They just, you know, Matt Gildersleeve, he had 2 months with the players before, you know, before they got to go to fall camp. And these things will change over time, okay? But last Saturday, it was a mismatch, and I didn't see it coming like that. You know, I knew Baylor was big and physical, but after watching against Texas State, man, I really misread that one.
Now, before we get into the Duke game, I'm going to send this over to the studio line, where John is now joined by Dave Harding, and Dave is the color analyst for the Duke Blue Devils radio network. He's going to give us the inside slant on the Duke football program as the Jayhawks gear up for the matchup this Saturday.
We are joined by Duke football color analyst Dave Harding. Dave, how's it going, man? Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, doing really well. Excited to get the Jayhawks out to Durham this weekend. Should be a lot of fun as the Big 12 and ACC kind of clash. But otherwise, man, college football is here. Who can have anything to complain about?
Well, you know, I wanted to ask you, first of all, I've kind of followed Duke, gone over some of their film, looked at the games, the stats. It's been kind of a weird start. They put up like 570 yards of offense and lost to Charlotte, and then they come back and build a big lead against Northwestern and then hang on there. Just what have you learned from them in the first three games?
I think the big thing has actually been the fact that they're willing to learn from themselves. And some teams you see kind of repeat the same mistakes over and over again. This seems to be a group that is determined, first of all, to find the winning formula and get back to the winning ways that Duke football enjoyed a couple of years ago. Last year certainly was a disappointment, but coming off of the Charlotte game, the offense executed pretty well. The defense, not so much, and being able to get the critical stops at the end of the game, and going out against North Carolina A&T the week after that, you saw the group really working on some of the fundamentals and some of the key areas of improvement, primarily finishing drives offensively and defensively, getting off of the field. You saw those vast improvements from week one to week two. And then you mentioned the hot start against Northwestern. I have not seen a better start to a Duke football game in several years. So it's a group that's maturing. They're figuring out how to work together, and I think they're going to be peaking at the right moment as they head into, obviously, another Power 5 matchup with Kansas, but very importantly also ACC play. Excuse me, ACC play the next week, starting with an arch rival in North Carolina.
You know, I wanted to start on the offensive side of the ball. I know David Cutcliffe has always been known as a really good offensive mind over the years. You know, just talk about the style of offense that they want to run, and then talk about who are some of the players to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. David Cutcliffe wants to be aggressive, and we've seen a few instances this year already where many coaches might either opt to punt it or might prefer to kick a field goal. And David Cutcliffe is saying, no, let's go for the touchdown. No, let's go try to move the sticks and pick up a first down. So he wants to be an aggressive style offense first and foremost, but he also wants to be methodical and how he does it. This year's offense is, I believe, run first. They've got Mateo Durant, who is a phenomenal talent at running back, one of the best running backs in the ACC, very versatile and able to attack defenses, certainly on the ground using his power, but speed to get to the edge, and then has really good hands and as a capable pass catcher. So the Blue Devils have really enjoyed using him in a variety of ways. Then, you know, it all obviously goes through the quarterback, and Gunnar Holmberg has been tutored under David Cutcliffe. Cutcliffe, I mean, if he's not an offensive mind, he's certainly a quarterback whisperer with the background that he has in Peyton and Eli Manning, Daniel Jones. And Gunnar Holmberg was kind of an unknown commodity coming into this season, but has done a phenomenal job of being a little bit more than a game manager, taking care of the football first and foremost. But outside of that, I feel like his confidence has grown through the first 3 weeks of the season to where he's able to go out and be the aggressive type player that David Cutcliffe wants out of his quarterback, and making calculated decisions that go after a defense.
You know, and then I guess somewhat same question moving over to the defensive side. You know, what are their strengths? What do they want to do scheme-wise, and who are some of their players to watch?
Well, coming into the season, one of the big question marks was the defensive line. A lot of youth there, a lack of experience, whether that's from transfers or graduating folks, people being drafted. And so a lot of the pressure this season has been put on the defensive backfield. And quite frankly, when you go back and watch the tape against Charlotte and why the Blue Devils lost, it was the players in the secondary, the players that were and had high expectations, were trying to do a little bit too much, getting their eyes caught in positions where maybe they're looking to make a pick as opposed to having blanket coverage on their man-to-man responsibility, and their guy in man coverage ends up slipping behind them because they were a step behind, watching the quarterback's eyes too much. And so the focus has been on, okay, yes, you're the strength in the secondary, but you've got to do your part first and foremost. And so this is a Blue Devil defense, similar to the offense, that likes to be aggressive. One of the big phrases is to dictate on defense. They don't want to sit back and let an offense decide what the defense is going to look like. And they're going to be confident in bringing zero pressure, playing man on the outside, and try to support the youthful defensive line. It's talented, but they're somewhat inexperienced with bringing safeties, linebackers, you name it, whether that's into the box for run support or in passing, obvious passing situations to help heat up the opposing quarterback.
You know, I don't know how much you've had a chance to study the Jayhawks, but I'm just curious to get your take on what do you see about these two teams, and what do you think about the matchup, and maybe how it might play out?
Well, I think the first thing goes outside of any scheme, and it's the hunger factor. Both of these programs are programs that have rich histories and are very proud of the product that they have on the field, but maybe, you know, lately haven't been performing up to their standards. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for both of these teams to make a statement with this game on Saturday. And so I'm very curious to see the reaction of both of these programs and the preparation that goes into it, but ultimately the execution on the field and the energy that that gets displayed in Durham on Saturday for the game. I think that's honestly the biggest factor. I think beyond that, it's going to come down to consistency. You referenced earlier, Duke got out to a hot start against Northwestern, cooled off in the second half, and almost found a way to lose the game. So the team that is more consistent, I think, will be able to thrive much more. Supposed to be a warm day or a nice day, but in Brooksfield at Wallace Wade Stadium. And so weather shouldn't be that much of a factor. And both of these offenses are going to have to figure out some of the mistakes that they had. Duke more on the penalty side. I know, passing efficiency for the Jayhawks hasn't been where they'd like to have it. So finding a way to work out those kinks to attack these defenses.
That's great information from Dave Harding, who is the analyst for the Duke Network. And Dave, I really appreciate you joining us.
It's been my pleasure. looking forward to having as many Kansas fans as possible in the stands on Saturday. And I think at the end of the day, you know, it's a chance for both of these programs, like I said, to make a statement. So let's buckle up and hopefully enjoy a great game.
All right, Dave, thanks a lot for joining us.
Great breakdown there from the Duke side. Kirby, what do you see from this game on Saturday?
Well, you know, I've gone back and watched Duke play a couple games, okay? I watched them play Charlotte, which, I mean, they had like 570 yards of offense and still found a way to lose that game. You know, Randy, there's some things. Duke's a little better than I was hoping, all right? The quarterback, he does some nice things. He's mobile. He's more mobile than you think. When you first watch, you think he might be a drop-back guy. Mateo Durant, the running back's really good. They've got some solid receivers. They hurry it up a little bit. They play with some tempo. That'll be something different for the Jayhawks. They're going to have to get used to that tempo. I'm sure they tried to simulate that in practice. And, you know, I got to tell you, I watched them against Northwestern, all right? And this was the game against Northwestern they played was a weird game. Northwestern's starting quarterback throws three picks in the first half. Then Northwestern was driving. They were down about the 10-yard line. They blitz him. They hit him. He fumbles. He gives the ball up. So he was really responsible for four turnovers. Duke builds I think it was a 27-0 lead. I think they went into the halftime 27-7 in total control. They come back out. Northwestern benches the number one guy. They bring in the two guy. The two guy, he starts moving the ball. They're moving the ball. Next thing you know, it's a game. Duke stalls out. They start turning the ball over. Then the number two guy gets hurt in the fourth quarter when they've kind of changed the momentum. And I thought it was interesting. They brought in the third guy to finish it out. They didn't even go back to the number one guy. He stayed on the bench after his first half. I think Fitzgerald said, I'm done there. So these are the things when you try to predict and project games, you're like, okay, how is Duke? Okay, they got four turnovers gifted to them in the first half. Northwestern turned the ball over five times. Duke is aggressive. They blitz defensively. You know, I think Bean is going to have a chance, you know, to have some running lanes and get out and do some things. And when I watch, so Randy, when we do our picks, I try to go back and analyze after watching film of teams that they're going to play and try to figure out what they're going to look like against those teams. Well, with Duke, again, it's hard to tell. I mean, they lose to Charlotte and they put up 570 yards. The other day they needed five turnovers to basically hang on. So you're sitting here and you're saying, God, if Kansas, who's still one of the nation's leader in turnover margins, they've only given the ball away once. If Kansas just goes in there and doesn't turn the ball over, God, you got to think they can just hang in the game based off that. So, you know, I don't know. The Holmberg kid is a nice quarterback. They put up yards. They do have some weapons. It's at Duke. I think Kansas can move the ball up front. Duke did get their big defensive tackle, Gary Smith. He's about 325-pound kid. They got him back last week. He does give them some size. I'll tell you, listen, I want to say Kansas can hang with somebody like Duke, okay? I don't know that Duke is a whole lot more physically talented than Kansas, but they're experienced. You know, they've been in a program. They've had a head coach coaching them for a while. So I can't go with the Jayhawks here, man. I'm going to say Duke 28, Kansas 20, but the Jayhawks maybe hang in this thing. Give me yours, man.
You know, I see it, and this is one of those examples. Last week was kind of the outlier where our scores were really far apart. I see this one about 31-17. I don't see a big difference between these teams in regards to how things are going to play out. I think that this is just going to be another one of those examples. You know, you talked about how the Duke program, you've got guys that have been in the program, that have been in the system, that know how they do things. You still have so many aspects of the Kansas Jayhawks that are still, they might as well be in their first 90 days with Lance Leipold, to be honest. They're still trying to figure out how they're going to
get on the plane and check into their hotel and stuff like that, they really haven't gotten into how they're going to do the things that make them unique yet. I think the improvement to me is very evident in this team. You know, Joe Lebo, who's always great about throwing out some really strong information and research on the board. And I know he and I go round and round. I got to give him some credit. And we talked about the fact how they, you know, the very significantly reduced number of penalties, the very few turnovers, as you mentioned, the turnover margin, you know, that they've improved in a number of areas that are hallmarks of good football teams, but they don't have the talent to be there where it matters most. And so that's how I see it. I see it about, you know, 31-17 you know, hopefully we see there's going to be the potential. I think you're right. I think there are going to be running lanes there for Jason Bean. I think there are some chances for big plays. If the defense can force a turnover in this game and they can sustain some drives with Devin Neal on the ground, there's a chance that this thing could be close at the end of the third quarter. I would love to see it just because I'd like to see how these players respond in that kind of a situation on the road. But that's my pick at this point.
Well, we both have it. At least your scores and our thinking on this game have this coming out better than the Baylor game.
Exactly. And yeah. That's, I think we both see it that way. I mean, I think if Baylor was playing Duke this weekend, I think they would absolutely beat the brakes off of them. You know, which is roughly what happened to Kansas. Baylor is a better football team, I think, than a lot of people realize. And what they did to the Jayhawks was they basically big boyed them. They said, excuse me, we're bigger than you. We're tougher than you. And we're going to do what we want. And that's what they did. And I think they're going to surprise some people in the Big 12, to be honest. So we talked about the game on the field. Maybe some of the most important aspects of what was going on last weekend against Baylor involved the recruits that were visiting on the sidelines and in the locker room before the game. Kirby, let's wrap this thing up talking about some of the players who were on campus in Lawrence last weekend. And it was a really solid group of guys.
Yeah, it was. It was. You know, I just ran a story since we're recording this late Wednesday night. You know, I ran a story this morning on Chandavian Bradley. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was interesting. You know, he said if he had to lay all of his mail out and measure it, he thinks it would be about a foot and a half tall from Kansas. And he said that he's definitely got a lot more mail from Kansas than anybody else. And he talked about Lance Leipold and Schoonover, the job they've done. And he talked about how active Leipold is. And, you know, he was there. And I posted a picture on there where he had Dominique Orange from North Kansas City and Edric Hill was in there, and DeJuan Mack, and hey, I'm interested to watch DeJuan Mack's game. I think they play Blue Valley North this week, if I'm not mistaken. Do they play?
That's a fun one.
Yeah, yeah, I think. I was looking down the schedule for high school games here in the area, just trying to see, you know, who I'd watch on Friday night. And hey, a couple offensive linemen, local guys, 2023, Calvin Clements from Free State. He had a good time, had a chance to communicate with him. Still working on getting in touch with Joe Otting. He and I have traded some messages. He was there. Samuel Same from Derby. He's an interesting guy. 2023.
He's a guy Brandon Clark told me about a couple years ago. Hey, he is an interesting athlete.
He is. I mean, he's like 6'5", 215, you know, good basketball player, good athlete. I mean, his frame, he is going to fill out. So, you know, he's one from Derby. There's no offer there yet. I get the feeling, though, the Jayhawks would probably have to offer him sometime here down the road. John Randall from Wichita Heights was there.
Well, there's a name we've heard.
Well, you know, the thing with Randall, they don't do much media stuff. Okay.
True.
And they don't, but I'll tell you what, I exchanged some pretty good messages with John Randall Sr. And I told him, I said, John Randall Sr. is still one of my favorite running backs I've watched at KU all over the last 20 years.
I mean, right there with you on that one.
He was fun to watch. He played his tail off. I still remember that run against Kansas State in 2004. Golly.
You remember him playing defensive back against Nebraska?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think when Kansas first started recruiting him when he was out of Wichita Southeast, that's what he was. He was, I think a lot of people were looking at him at originally as a defensive back, but he was just such a great athlete. Cooper Roy was there from Glendale. Mm-hmm. He, you know, last year he set the all-time Missouri sack record. So, you know, no offer there yet, but they're on him. So, you know, it was a nice group of guys, especially on the local side, because, you know, most of your unofficial visitors that come in are going to drive, so they're fairly close. So
exactly.
Hey, you can, there are no complaints about that. And hey, Randy, while we're on recruiting, I want to bring this back up because Thursday could be interesting, and then maybe again, I think they might meet October 5th, but the NCAA Oversight Committee, I think they're getting close, and this is going to be something that's going to help Kansas, because I keep thinking about, you know, Velton Gardner entering the portal and how the portal has been okay to Kansas, and then it hasn't been okay because they were able to get some guys from Buffalo to kind of balance out players that they lost in the portal, but this portal isn't going away. But the Oversight Committee is going to vote. And there's a lot of talk about what they're going to do. But one of them is getting rid of the 25 hard cap or keeping it at 25 and giving you 7 additional spots for kids you leave that are transfers. Okay. So that would give you an additional 7 to play with if you lost kids in the portal. There's been another one where they've talked about saying, like, you get 50 scholarships over 2 years and you can use up to 30 in a class if you need to. Some things like that can help Kansas and Leipold and his staff because it gives them the ability to be more flexible because they're taking over a situation where we know the scholarship numbers have just been funny for the last 5 to 6 years. You know, they just haven't been right. There's just been a lot of stuff going on and the way that, and I'm not criticizing anybody because they were, you know, using a lot of scholarships for, they were trying to get mature and transfer players in here that could win, maybe help previous staffs earlier. But there's a few different things at play. I know there's another rule they're talking about that for every kid that leaves the program, like just says, I quit football, or medical reasons, you get to replace that. If a kid leaves for the NFL, maybe give them one to replace that. So we're still waiting on exactly what's going to happen, but I think it's going to happen. And I think it's going to happen within the next, I think, 2 weeks. I think by October 5th we'll know. But boy, I'll tell you, this could really change the way we look at KU's class because I think they've been very cautious on what they're doing in 2022. Because they want to look at the program. They want to see where maybe some of the weaknesses are, maybe where they want to use some scholarships. And if they get some extra numbers to play with, that could really help the program.
Do you think they've been maybe hedging their bets a little bit, kind of playing, maybe keeping some things warm just in case they get the opportunity to extend a late offer?
No, what I really think they're going to do is they're going to evaluate their football team, okay? And I mean, they could come out and say, we've got to go get a kicker, okay? They could come out and say, you know, who knows what it's going to be. They could come out and say, we need 3 linebackers, or we need 2 linemen and 2 DNs. And I'm just throwing this out as speculation.
Of course, of course.
But I think they want to get through the season, okay, before they start putting things on hard paper and saying, this is what we're going to do. But I think they want to evaluate their team to say, all right, let's go look at the portal for these X positions. We think we can strengthen the team. But they have to see the kids play first before they know that. Remember, Leipold has, you know, he's coached 3 games and 4 weeks of practice, right? So, I mean, he's still learning this team, and his staff and the position coaches are still learning this team. So that is something to really watch. And I'm kind of getting off topic of moving away from the specific, you know, recruits who were on campus, but this is important to watch.
So what you're saying is there is a chance that Rob Iannello could be really, really busy. So,
what's going to happen is Rob Iannello is going to have all the guys who work for him be really, really busy.
See, and that is what a quality manager, what a quality general manager does. That's right. There.
Well, that is the final word, and that wraps it up for this edition of the Inside Slant podcast from JayhawkSlant.com. We've now recapped the loss to Baylor. We've gotten you ready for this Saturday against Duke. We've talked about things on the recruiting trail. For once, we didn't talk about realignment, and God, I'm glad about that. For John Kirby, I'm Randy Withers. This has been the Inside Slant podcast. We'll talk to you again next week.
This has been a podcast from JayhawkSlant.com.